The Koi Gig Pod.
We were too quick to drop off 3v1. That's been a problem that we actually stopped against Scotland because Niamh Fahey stepped in to stop Caroline Weir.
Subscribe to the feed in the OTB Sports app now. OTB GAA.
Welcome to the Mike Quirk Podcast.
Now give me my theme music.
This series is brought to you with the help of PST Sport. PST Sport is a design and build specialist contractor focusing exclusively on the design and construction of artificial grass pitches and supporting infrastructure for soccer, GAA, rugby, hockey and tennis. PST's portfolio includes over 50 FIFA certified artificial grass pitches, as well as multiple pitches tested and approved for World Rugby, GAA and FIH standards. PST Sports have done over 500 artificial grass pitches for clubs, schools, colleges and local authorities in Ireland and the UK for all different sporting codes. Visit pstsport.com for more details. Okay, happy new year, everybody, and welcome back to the seventh episode of season two, where we try and scratch a little bit below the surface of coaching and look for ways that we can all do it a small bit better. Hope everybody had a nice Christmas and is ready to get back on the field or in the gym, wherever you are with your own team. Delighted to say this week that my guest will be well known to most of you from the basketball courts and football pitches of Ireland, Kieran Donaghy. Kieran, very welcome.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks a million for having me.
How's Christmas? All good?
Christmas was great. Santi came. Everybody's happy. Santi did a good job of keeping four goldfish alive for maybe three or four nights on the way over from the North Pole, which was very testing times to make sure they all survived. But thankfully, on Christmas morning, they were all okay. So yeah, that was about my most stressful part of Christmas now.
It's the construction elements that he leaves for some people that are a little bit more challenging of his time. But anyway, it's good that he's all over and everybody's had a good time.
Exactly.
Talk to me. So, man, we're obviously looking at coaching and different things. So you're currently involved with Armagh and Kieran McGeaney up there. Previously, you would have worked in Galway as a performance coach with the hurling team. You would have been involved with coaching and managing the Sigerson team in Tralee. You would probably have been helping out different bits and pieces with Aston Stacks, your own club, which you finished up with last year. And then obviously the basketball side of things from playing days with the Tralee Tigers and now into the Tralee Warriors. It's a very kind of varied, you know, look at different sports and you know, hurling, basketball, football. It's giving you a wide kind of angle. What's currently the biggest thing that you've picked up from looking at all those different sports, I suppose, along the way?
I suppose, like, you know, the performance coach term with Galway is always a loose one. I was helping out a small bit with the forward movement, but it was a fascinating insight for me. One, to get in with a high-performing group that were after winning in All-Ireland 2 years previous in 17 and getting to work with Mihal O'Donoghue and his backroom team. And just looking at hurling and trying to figure out maybe around the movement patterns as a full forward. It actually came from Mihal was down watching a Kerry training. He asked Eamon Fitzmaurice, could he go in and watch Kerry training? And he saw myself and Gooch inside, kind of, you know, maybe rub screens, kind of cutting off each other, the timing, the understanding of when I knew Cullum got a ball over on the sideline, when he was bending down to pick it up, I knew, and he knew that I would always be coming short for him then. If he won it into the breadbasket and got turned, I would know that he might be looking for a more, you know, a creative pass, we'll say. So I could maybe be creative with my runs. And if he got the pass, then there was goal on. And if I didn't, he'd probably pip it over the bar. So I guess what my role was up there, and it was a very small role in the general scheme of things, but was just looking at their inside movement and maybe pre-movement before. I would have had a feeling in the hurling that it was very much that the backs would determine where the forwards would run. And I was trying to help and did a great big full forward, Johnny Glynn. So I was kind of working with him on, you know, his movement pre the ball coming, that he would be where he wanted to be, but not standing underneath it, that he would come swooping in, trying to attack it. So just that was a fascinating insight. One, to be very observant of the group and just learn. And I was very vulnerable to the group, as you can imagine. I think I even remember saying, picture one of E going down next year, lads, because I was just out of Kerry at the time. I said, picture one of E going down next year and going in and being told, go in and help the Kerry forwards there, because that's where Galway were at the time. They did the great Joe Canning. They had a really good team. They were just pipped by Limerick the year before. So it was a real eye-opener for me, but it was great to see the culture, to see how they did things as opposed to how we did things with Kerry the year before. And, you know, so you're learning. And I think my biggest thing as a player, Mike, and we played together in both codes, I would say that I tried to learn as much as I could from everybody. You know, I try and delve into coaches, players, because Russ Bradbird, our great basketball coach, always said like that I was a sponge for information. So I might have been good at the plays and all that kind of stuff, but I wanted every little insight that someone could give me to see could it improve me as a player. And ultimately, I think coaching is just really trying to help the person, number one, but just trying to improve them. And that's probably, you know, I'm very rookie. I'm still a rookie, consider myself a massive rookie. Even when you asked me to come on this, I was like, oh, geez, Mike, I'm only at this a few years and I don't want to be telling anybody what I think they should be doing. But I would say learning for me, I'm at the very start of the journey of coaching. So I'm right back to where I was in my young days as a player, which is just trying to learn as much as possible and trying to dissect it and put it into my own language and my own ideas, and then trying to put that across to a bunch of players.
Yeah. And I think, to be fair, man, that's a common theme across everybody, whether they're coaching 40 years or 4 years. That idea of coaching is a kind of a lifelong pursuit of just getting better incrementally every year. Can I find something else? Can I tweak this? Can I tweak that? And just kind of keep learning from each other and keep growing. But that must have been, though, to be fair, going into that Galway, like, that's a really good way to put it, asking one of the Galway guys to go down to Kerry there and start talking to him about their forward movement. It's pretty much the same thing. Like, it was, you must have been a complete kind of fish out of water there at the start.
Yeah, I'll never forget it. They were above in Athenry and they were in their gym. And I was talking to the group, my first time talking to the group. So yeah, it was, they were actually such a great bunch of lads, to be honest. And I think I was very open with them in the fact that, look, lads, if I can bring a 0.5% to this overall thing, or even a 0.5% to a player, I think that's all Michal was looking for me. He was just looking for maybe a different angle and a different thought process on especially the inside guys, like, you know, and they had some unbelievable players. So, you know, it was just to get them around the ideas of, you know, just doing a small bit of like on early screens and just thinking that step ahead rather than who's got the ball. Now they've hit it. Okay, I have to run out and try and win it. That can we see the next hand pass 100 yards away? Can I start moving now? So when that guy receives the hand pass and turns, that there's actually a guy breaking out. And look, they were doing that anyway before that, but it was just little, trying to get little tweaks around them. But it was a huge, for me, it was, even though I thought it was a prank call first from Michal, I don't know who, I thought it was one of the Shays or something winding me up. I had to do a bit of quizzing before I opened up to the call. But yeah, look, he saw that movement from myself and Cullum, and he was just saying, look, if you could bring any bit of that or try and help us with any bit of that movement up top. So then it was about me watching loads of video, asking the coaches loads of questions. You know, what are guys, you know, like, yeah, complete like a fish out of water. It's like, even though hurling and football, they're both GAA, you might as well be going into a rugby setup or a soccer setup. It's a completely different game, even though you see it more. You see the Waterfords now, they're nearly like a football team. They're little 20-yard passes, 20-yard stick passes nonstop. And there's more of that kind of coming into it. I think the running down the sideline and flaking at 90 yards and giving a fist pump for the crowd is genuinely going away from the game of hurling. And I think the purists would like to keep it, because there's something about hurling that I think it has ahead of football, is that there's more 50-50 contests and there's more of that edge of your seat excitement when a ball's coming down out of the sky. But I think teams are starting to maybe mind possession a bit more. But yeah, just look, a great learning curve for me, and something that, again, when I look back in 10 or 15 years, you know, what I learned off of Michal and the lads up there, you know, as I said, I would have taken bits from Russ Bradbird as a coach, Joey Boylan, the Irish team. You're just trying to learn all the time off of these guys.
Yeah, they still do love a good fist pump, man, in Darling.
I love a good fist pump too.
Yeah. Like, if anybody knows listening to this and they're saying Quirk and Donaghy are after been talking for the first 10 minutes of this thing about hurling, like, they might have switched off at this stage. So we'll kind of go and start pushing it, yeah, pull it back to something we might be a little bit more knowledgeable about. Like, so obviously you're in Armagh now, and what would you have taken from that experience that you're kind of bringing now to your, you know, coaching? And I'm sure whenever you finish with Armagh, you'll take stuff from that and moving on to wherever you are next. Like, what, you know, you're talking about learning. What are those things that you've improved on since you've started? Because really, you're only coaching kind of, you know, take your Sigerson stuff.
3 or 4 years, yeah.
3 or 4 years, really. So, like you said, the infancy of what you hope will be a long time doing that. So what are the things that you've kind of picked up already from Michal, from Kieran McGeaney, from your experience with the Sigerson, from Wayne Quinlan, Nasta Stacks? What are those, some of those, and Russ Bradbury, Joey Boylan, all those people that we'll talk about in a minute in the basketball sense?
You know, I think what I've learned really is, I suppose my role as a player varied so much over the years. I was a fella that was trying to make the breakthrough for a few years. I was on the team. I was player of the year. I was off the team, on the team. I went through all the range of emotions as a player. So, and I think what I saw was little tweaks, little differences in how maybe I was approached from a backroom team point of view at different stages of that cycle. And I remember kind of out of that kind of saying to myself, when I get in, you know, I must greet number 32 the way I greet number one. And, you know, even though with Armagh, I try and do that, I'm obviously, I get up once or twice a week, depending on what way of work is with me. And the fact that I can get out onto the pitch, shake hands with the fellas, ask them how they are. Literally, I spend probably 8 or 9 minutes walking around just trying to get contact with as many fellas as I can. Because I think that's important. I think these guys are putting so much into the game now, Mike. And you know, obviously, with Kerry, we see it now at the highest level. You know, what they're putting in is far more than what we put in when we were playing. And, you know, if it's not even as rewarding, I think, as it was. Like, if we were number 29 or 30, we were delighted. We were part of the match team. We were going up for the day. You could tell your family, I'm on the squad. You were running around Croke Park. Now you could have 45 fellas training and 26 get to tag out for game day. So you've 19 guys there that are sitting there kind of going, you know, what's this all about? And they're brilliant players and they're working hard and they're doing the gym. So I think the biggest learning for me is trying to keep in contact with guys that might be, I try and think about coming home, you know, is there somebody that might need a pickup here, or you know, I would have even with my time with the Galway lads, I would have been looking like who's a bit sad coming off today, or and just trying to kind of, because I've been, as I said, it's very vivid to me when you're the main man. They're all, we're going to do this, we want to do this, what do you think about this, what you want? And next thing, all of a sudden, you're not that guy, and for whatever reasons, you're just not it. And next thing, all of a sudden, it's very quiet and you're kind of wondering where you are, and now every little thing you're doing, you're analysing it away more for yourself. And I think that's hard for players, you know. And I think the guys in the background are obviously huge. I know Tony Griffin, I think, probably helped a lot with that with your group this year. And we've got a great guy in our Hugh Campbell. He's really good with players and spotting that. And I think that's a real powerful thing, because if you can get everybody feeling the love and feeling like they're important, because they are essential, you know, like, was just 26 in the match day, but for your trial game the weekend before, you need 34, 35, 36 guys. You need them really going at it to test the starters, to try and improve themselves, to try and move up the ranges. So I think that's a big one, is making sure that, you know, there's no point you having to start in 15. All great, everyone's happy, and then you're 15 to 26, you know, not really sure about themselves, but more importantly, you're 26 to your 40, you know, you're 35 or whatever it is when it kind of gets narrowed down come championship. Those are the guys that I think determine how well you're tested. And if you look at the success Dublin had for so long, that I think that was a huge part of it. Their second team were highly motivated, in a really good place, and really pushing their A team, which meant their A team were ready for anything when you threw everything at them.
And that's definitely a change in at senior intercounty level in the last 10, 15 years from when you were, like, as you just articulated, from when you were playing and I was playing to now. And I would have been one of those guys far more often than you would, obviously. But that idea of, geez, it's very quiet around here now. It's really quiet. There's no whole pile happening. And it's amazing the power of a phone call or a 60-second conversation about here's what you could do to, you know, push yourself up the line. It's amazing the effect that that can have on fellas as well. Like,
even a WhatsApp, you know, a little message to, you know, stay going, keep going, you're going well. Even guys that are injured, you know, I remember, you know, that year in 13 when I did osteopubis injury and I looked healthy, I was walking around, I had no crutches, but I felt guys kind of looking at me like, what's his story? Like, why isn't he putting it in? Why isn't he training? Why isn't he doing this? And like the drives home from Killarney, they're a lonely drive and that's a half an hour. I'd hate to be living in Drummond where Declan Sullivan was and having an hour and 15 minutes for myself to be thinking about it in the car because, you know, you're just addling yourself constantly. So even keeping an eye on fellas that are out injured because you know you're going to need them when they come back and the squad plays such an important role. You know, we two guys come on against Galway last year that hadn't played for Armagh before, you know, Owen Woods and Justy Cairns and both came on. Both were really showing well in training and, you know, had never played league or championship or anything and there you go, lads. You know, it's extra time against in the All-Ireland quarterfinal in Croke Park. You know, we need you to go in and do a job. And in fairness to both of them, you know, when they were called upon were excellent to come in and both scored a point and both tackled and tracked and worked hard and played well for the team. And that's really all you can ask for guys is to be ready, but you have to try and, I think, help them along the road to make sure when that chance comes that they feel a part of it.
Yeah. Mental side of it for those guys is such a challenge. It's real easy when you're the top guys, obviously, and you know you're going playing every week and you know your challenges. But it's those other fellas that are locked in that bit of uncertainty that is a big key.
We're all on that. Like you said it. I heard you with Paddy last week. Like you were talking about the young lad coming home with his dad in the car. Like, you know, we're all kind of young lads. You know, I know we're grown men. But we're all young lads, like, you know, and that kind of uncertainty sits in us all, I think, unless you're like the upper echelons of player that's just bulletproofed everything and has so much ability that they just back themselves no matter what. But if you don't have that ability and you're really relying on your fighting ability or your scrapping ability or your catching ability, or, you know, if your game is pocketed towards one area and that's struggling, you know, a text from a guy or a call from a guy, you know, when you're not going well. And like, there's no point in like, you know, I had this out with managers at times and, you know, look, you're not in the weekend. And, you know, you were telling me I was moving great 2 weeks ago. Like, you know, like I want to be told, Kieran, you're not moving great. There's more in you, but you're not doing A, B and C. And if you don't start doing this, you're going to be sitting on the bench. I can take that information. I can go home. Like, we wouldn't have diarized it like they do now, but I would have, if it was now, I'd write that down the diary and say, okay, I'm not working hard enough. I'm not getting back and I need to score more. Okay, well, I need to go fix these in the next training session, the next trial game. And they'd be very, and then I can know going home, well, I improved that. I'm still poor at that, you know, but if you don't know and you're just drifting along and then you're not on it, there's nothing more frustrating than, oh, look, you're not on, you're dropped. And, oh, look, he's coming back. It's trying to keep every fella kind of clued in to where they're at and what they can improve on, I think is a good place for players because it gives them focus to what they can maybe can be doing at home.
Yeah. Focusing on that process as opposed to maybe the outcome or whatever. Just you know what? The basketball thing always comes up. Anytime I'm doing one of these things and people ask me about the crossover basketball and I get a bit tired and it's a bit lazy, I think, to talk just about, you know, the crossover. But specifically, like, to get into the little nuts and bolts of what are the transferable aspects of playing and coaching basketball to moving then onto the Gaelic football pitch. How have you seen basketball influence Gaelic games now in Gaelic football in particular in the last couple of years? What kind of specific things now, like, as opposed to the just the usual generalizations?
Behind-eye catching, you know, hands, stuff, and you throw it out every time,
and it's like, oh yeah, hand-eye coordination, you know.
I think that, like, you know, and it's something I have to do a lot more on and a lot more learning on. I've even talked to you about this years ago, is like, you know, I was playing basketball and football so hard for so long that I didn't really have time to go away. And maybe learn more about coaching or go to clinics and learn small-sided games and what you can do for this and what you can do for that. I'm very much going on my ideas and the way I like the game to be played and where I think you can attack teams. And I'm like, you know, I know shame in saying that I'm a very much an ideas guy, and you know, I'm working on and trying to get better at how do you implement that. But I always hear you on about small sided games. You know, that is basketball, you know, 5-on-5, that's what it is. And I think the biggest transferable asset that's missed in all these kind of, oh, your hands and your vision and your peripheral vision and all this, I think, is decision making. And I think if you go back and look at the great basketballers, Liam McHale, Sherlock, yourself, McGarity, myself, fellas that were playing at a really high level in basketball, whenever they get out onto football pitch, the one thing I think you could say about all of them is they're smart. They might not have the skill set that the footballers would have, but they're smart. They're in the right place at the right time. They don't give the ball away too often. And I think a lot of that comes from basketball, and basketball is a 5-on-5 game. So when you play more small-sided games in training, you're getting more decisions to be made. And going back to my famous crack at Jack inside in the dressing room before the 11 final about the scenarios, that's another huge part of it for me. So your small-sided games, trying to get as much of them in as possible where guys are having to make multiple decisions, both offensively and defensively, so they get used, because the game has gone that way. Your corner forwards have to defend now, so they have to be switched on to a guy making a run or whatever. So I would say that's the biggest thing. And then the scenarios, for me, there were something that I went to Jack with in that time, which was, you know, can we get a scoreboard in the stadium? Can we get 10 minutes left in the clock? I want, you know, because we're playing training. It's great football. It's Kerry football. Mike Frank is throwing the ball over. Gooch is at the other end throwing it over. It's all great, but who's winning? What's the score? How desperate are we for this next kickout? If we don't know what's going on in the game, you know, how can we play accordingly? And then what happens is you find yourself in a game where you're down 4 points. Nobody kind of really knows how we're supposed to attack this. So I think for me, the scenarios were the start of it, and trying to really work on them, then even with Stacks over the last few years, trying to come up with stuff and trying to actually do them over and over again. So your team might pull back a 6-point lead in 10 minutes twice out of 10 goals, but you've done it 10 times. And when you're chasing a game, you're hoping that some of them guys that are out there go, we've done this in training. Right, okay, we need to press and kick outs. We need to push them to sidelines. We need to do whatever we need to do to get back into the game. So I think that's a huge transferable, I think, from the basketball court, and why there seems to be more and more basketball guys getting involved in football, is around that kind of ideas and movement as well of forwards, getting defenders. Like, we both played with Mark O'Shea. Mark O'Shea would have been an unbelievable defender on a basketball court because of his lateral movement, his quickness, his anticipation, his hands, you know, and not every back had that. You know, and if you could get all your backs doing a bit more sliding, a bit more speed of foot, and then again, that small-sided games, can you get a lot of that defensive stuff going? So I would say they're the two parts for me, the scenarios, what you can come up with to try and help your team. Me and you played, right, for years, Mike. We knew how we were playing if we were up by 10 with 4 minutes to go or we were down by 10. And it was poles apart. So it's very similar in football. And it's easier to get five fellas on the same page to carry out that game. You 15 guys out there, like, you know, are these guys, do they all know we're four down? Do they all know there's 10 minutes to go? Do they all know these two guys are on yellows? Are they, you know, is that going on upstairs? Or are they just going, where's the ball? I want to try and get on the ball. I want to mark my man. Are they that basic, or are they thinking overall for the team? And I think if you can get them guys on the same page, I think that'd be, that's a huge part of what we're trying to do as coaches. Can your team be on the same page when you need them to be on the same page as much as possible?
Yeah. No, that's definitely better than hand-eye coordination and peripheral vision, you know? But it is, like, if you look at, like, I remember, I think it was Pat Shea was the first guy we used to get a printout of like, your stats and your possessions and this and that. And we'll say you might have had, you know, a few 25 touches, you had a decent game, you know. Like, in basketball, you're probably having 25 touches in the first quarter. You know, you know there's 5 seconds to go to the end of the quarter. You know, this guy's got four fouls. If he picks up one more, he's fouled out. You know, you're getting killed in rebounds. Whatever it is, it definitely helps you to develop a greater sense of awareness around the game. And like you said, a better understanding of exactly what's going on and what do we need to do in these different scenarios. And that's, I suppose, then what you're talking about in terms of the games-based approach and trying to replicate that to a lesser extent where we're reducing the number of players in a pitch and you're playing like 5-on-5 or 4-on-4, whatever it is, and you're playing a couple of those different games and you're trying to just repetition of getting fellas touches, making those decisions and developing that awareness that you're talking about. Like you mentioned there about Gooch earlier about, you know, you could tell when he was picking up the ball a certain way, you know, whatever way he received it, you knew he was going to make this kind of a pass or you knew you had time to make a more creative run. That only comes from understanding and playing and training and repeating those different things over and over and over again. And the only way you're going to do that is through those small-sided games. If that's the way you're going to go with it.
Yeah, and like, you know, I think there's still a place for the old-fashioned staying on for 10 minutes afterwards or getting out there 15 minutes before. You know, if you're going to be, you know, I was acutely aware that if I was going to be in the trenches of a game, so was Gooch. And, you know, trying to be on the same page, trying to have an understanding. This isn't chance, you know, like if I pick up this shit ball, bending down, going towards the sideline, I know I've only got a second to turn, get it onto my left leg, and I need the big guy coming for me so I can play a little 1-2 with him. And the other corner forward knowing that he's going to clear out of there to get to Gooch, to bail him out. Now I can fill his space. Like, doing that in reps and talking to guys about it. And, you know, I think there's still a huge place for that in the game as much as all the other stuff we expect them to do now, the gym, the stretching, the rolling, the foam rolling, the, you know, the mindfulness part, the getting space for themselves, there's so much they have to do. And I'm always preaching, just look, lads, kind of get out there a few minutes early and get game speed stuff. Like, you don't have to be going at 100 miles an hour, but there's no point standing out there, getting the ball, standing, looking at the post. If you're not a free taker, and go and kicking the ball over the bar, you are never going to do that in a game. So can you run out, get a ball, fake one-way turn and snapshot it over your shoulder? Because you will need to do that in a game. So, you know, it's like the old, it's like the one you go into a basketball hall and you see fellas practicing half-court shots. Like, you're like, lads, right, you're going to take one of them a year. Go up there and practice your free throws. You could take 10 of them a game. So just getting them solid and that's every sport. And, you know, I remember my first fell in love with coaching was Blow on the Green. I was on the Irish under 17s and I was coaching the under 15s. And when I was in 6th year, they were then under 17s. And coaching them guys and the poor old creators, like, they got no lunch. Like, there was no lunch. Like, 5 lunchtimes a week, they were in the hall. John O'Keefe would cone off half the court for me. There was the rest of the school kids would be blowing 3 baskets. When I go in there now and look at the size of the place, I'm like, geez, you were selfish, Kieran, with that team. Like, the rest of the school had no space. I'd half court and a ball daren't come up, like, you know, because I was doing stuff with the boys and getting given out to teachers because they were coming back late to class. But it was trying to, you could see them getting better the more practice they had. And if I was just doing a Tuesday at 4 o'clock, 4 to 5, that was 1 hour. Whereas if I was doing 5 hours through all the lunch times, they were getting 4 more hours time shooting and practicing the skills and trying to get them to do a lot of that at a young age. And I know you do a lot of great stuff on this podcast with the young people and stuff, but can you make it fun and can you get them practicing what they're actually going to be doing in a game when it comes to them when they're 14 or 15 at that age? And that's where I must say my love for maybe, or my want to try and become a decent coach or manager would have been from that them two teams in the Green and dealt with the heartache of losing an All-Ireland final in the last second and, you know, how to try and get around the group after that and try and pick fellas up and you know, the pain that sits in your chest for that long time after a loss. That's where it first got me was with that team. And that's where I think, you know, even as a player, as you say, when I was always playing, I was always thinking, you know, how can we, not me really, but how can we become better? And if there was anything I thought that would become better, wrongly or rightly, I would always try and get it across to someone, whether it be a manager or one of the selectors. I think we could look at this or I think we could look at that. And a lot of times I was wrong, and a lot of times I'm still wrong to this day. But you know, if I don't say anything, nothing will come out. So that communication is a big part. I would also say it comes out of basketball. Me and you, we would have been able to communicate hugely. And I think it's a real thing that we can really improve in the GAA. I think the soccer is really good at it. The rugby is really good at it. Basketball is really good at it. But just talking to each other more out on the pitch, letting fellas know where you are, if you're coming to double team, calling it, if you're coming to support, just the right type of communication, encouraging each other. We're good to kind of throw a few Fs into fellas, you know, if they do something wrong in a training game. But can you be the guide? Can you be the Steve Nash that goes around the high-fiving everybody? And, you know, people want to play with that guy. So can you try and get more of that involved in your sessions is a big one as well.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. And that is a huge part of the basketball as well. And I keep going back to it because I think it has such kind of a foundational kind of impact on what you were trying to become as a coach, because you have that in your back burner. You're listening to the guys like Russ Bradford or Mark Burnson or Dave Falvey, all these fellas, and whether they were great coaches or good coaches, you're picking something out of them the whole time. And that idea of running set plays, the difference, you know, in when you get a turnover and you're going in transition, all that kind of terminology has infiltrated GAA now. When we're all looking to try and score in transition, or what can we do against this defense, or what we can do, and it's becoming a little bit, you know, there's stuff being taken from it, but it's just interesting. Yeah, the communication piece is still a huge, huge part of it, obviously.
Yeah, it's a focus point. I think that, you know, teams will continue to try and work on and come up with ways that will improve it, and, you know, where and when. But look, yeah, I was a talker. It was so natural to me, coming from being a point guard in basketball, that I would talk to everybody. You know, if Declan Sullivan roasted some fella and kicked the point, I couldn't wait to run out behind Declan and tell him how great of a score it was. But I wasn't telling Declan, I was telling the fella that was running out after him, that was after getting scored on. But like that's even just communication in its roughest sense, yeah. But you're trying to G your guy up, and you're trying to put doubt in the other guy's head, and, you know, just that level. I could jog out and say nothing to and save a bit of energy, but maybe Declan gets a little half a percent to lift off it. Maybe his man gets a half a percent down. And mm-hmm. Look, we talked of parties, grain of rices, and your man with the inches in any given Sunday, and the game often, as you well know, boils down to them things.
Yeah, you mentioned the youth stuff there a minute ago, man, and I wanna kind of touch on that a bit with you as well, obviously, because like only here yesterday, my two buddies were over and they called up, and before I knew it, the four of them were out the side of the house, and they were playing basketball for about 2 hours nonstop, 2-on-2. There was no one out there blowing a whistle. There was no one calling fouls. There was no, like, let's get behind the cones, boys, and work on our layups for half an hour. It was just, let's play. Let's pick two teams and let's just play and flake each other and have crack and enjoy and learn from it, you know? And I was just thinking before this, like, obviously they've done your camps and stuff, and your camps, for people that maybe aren't aware that are listening to this, that aren't based around Kerry, are obviously very, very popular. Yourself and Fergal Sullivan run the crossover camp now, which you did it once with football and basketball, but it's predominantly a basketball camp. But they're
yeah, we do it in the summer when the weather is good. Yeah, we'll do the both of them. Yeah. I think one thing that we try and do is get a real upbeat, high caliber coaches involved. I think kids respond really well to high fives. You're doing great. This is brilliant. Oh my God, you made a shot. Like some of these kids are 6 and 7, and, you know, we all remember our first ball going through a hoop and that feeling you get. And if you can be pumped up by, you know, I try, like Fergal's brilliant. Fergal during lockdown did loads with the kids, even inside in the house, showing them dribbling stuff and all that. When the weather is good, so Easter and summer, we do 1 week where the footballers are outside and the basketballers are in the hall for 2 hours. And for the last hour, we get all the basketballers to put on their football boots, even if they don't play it, and just come out and see if could they learn something. And then the footballers go in to the basketball hall and they meet a whole new range of coaches, a whole new game. They're out of their comfort zone. Some of them mightn't play any basketball. They could be the best footballer out there. So you're keeping them kind of humble and showing them that, like, you know, you might be good at one thing, but that doesn't mean you're good at everything. But can you now adapt in this new role and try and improve yourself? But I would say when we're picking the coaches, me and Fergal, like, you know, we always try and we obviously try and get some of the Warriors players because they'd be kind of like heroes to the kids in the town. But like if the guy is a great player but he's a terrible coach or he isn't that good with kids, like we wouldn't get him down. So like the Fleming twins there now that we have that play with the Warriors, two young lads from Coro, come in, high energy guys, want to help the kids, want to high five them, pick them up, have fun with them. They're big kids themselves in a way. And like Padraig and Aaron might play 5 minutes or 2 minutes of a Super League game. They could score a layup. You know, one of the Americans could have 40 points, but like they'll all run to Padraig when they come into the hall because Padraig is really invested in making sure that they have a good time for the 3 hours they're here. And I think that's, if that can be your focus point that you write down before you start coaching your under eights team or whatever, I'm going to make sure that they're going to have a rake of fun today. Like, there's nobody going to be going, oh, his drill was brutal. Or, you know, obviously when he gets to senior level, you have to be able to implement stuff that people like to do or they find challenging or they find interesting. But for kids, as you say, with your two lads playing out there for 2 hours, you said they really don't care. They just want to have fun and play. And I would say the coaches, when me and Fergal sit down and talk to them, we do very simple stuff. Like we say, okay, after the first session, the first day, we'll say, okay, look, these are the groups. Oh, he's the best. These two are the best kids by a mile. You know, they're the best kids by a mile in that group. Okay, Padraig, you have to go to the two of them now tomorrow. And these two kids are the weakest. And you have to tell them when the game starts, I want you to actively try and get that kid a basket. So when they're playing their little bit of a game at the end or they're playing hot seat, you want that kid talking to the kid that is very uncomfortable in their surroundings because mom has brought them up. It's a camp. It gets them off the Xbox and iPads for 3 or 4 hours. They're going to be active. They're going to be healthy. They're indoors. They're outdoors. This is a chance for them. But some of the kids come up and they're kind of like, oh, I kind of want to do this, but like, you know, I've just been brought up here. So can you get them going out the first day? And it's very hard, like, you know, with the numbers, can you get them all on it? But that would be a job of each coach with each group to look. And I would always say, if there's a kid really struggling, bring me over or bring Fergal over. And we would take that kid slightly off to the side one-on-one and be like, look, you're doing great. This is hard. It's not going to be easy. You know, practice this, practice that. It's, you know, you don't become good at basketball or football in 5 minutes. It's going to take a bit of time, but look, you're a great athlete. You've got, you know, try and go on the good stuff that they have and tell them that this is going to come and this is going to be really good for them when they're older. And I find it hard to get the balance right between having kumbaya and no score and everybody have a great time versus at a certain age, and especially with the second bracket kids, maybe 11 to 14, some of them kids are competitive. They want to play. They want to have the pain of losing or the joy of winning. And I try and get that going and build that up, you know, and keeping the score. And I think the sport is the last great equalizer. Mike, versus, you know, I want that tie in the shop. I think as parents and where society has gone, you know, when we were young, it was just a flat no. Your parents didn't have the money. It wasn't possible. You kind of knew it. You were just chancing your arm. Whereas I think now they know, look, yeah, dad'll probably be able to get me this. I'm going to chance my arm. And inevitably the soft side of us will go after a bit of a huff puff. Oh, look, what is it? Yeah, it's $12.99. Okay, I'll get it for you. And that'll, you know, and kind of getting what they want as they move through. I want to stay up late. I want to, you know, I want this out of the fridge. I want a yogurt before I go to bed. It's kind of yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
And I think sport is the last great kind of equalizer into, no, you didn't put in the effort. You didn't go home practicing your shot for 2 hours last night. That's why you lost hot seat in the end, or that's why you lost that game in the end. And just to have them feel a bit of that, I think is really important for them when they come like 17 and 18 and they're told, no, you didn't get that job, or no, you didn't get into college. You know, I think sports sets them up for that big time. And that's what I love about trying to work on the balance of keeping everyone going for as long as you can. Everything is good. They're stations, they're learning a bit, but you're trying to make it fun, but you're trying to give them stuff that they can work on when they go home if they're by themselves. But then also you're trying to get them to feel that little bit of a burn in the pit of the stomach that might say, well, I tell you, no, I got beaten in hot seat today, no, but I'm going to qualify for this final tomorrow. And they're the kids like when I used to go home after watching the Vinnie Murphys and the Ricks and these fellas playing in the complex, I'd come home at 10 o'clock at night. It's always winter, gloves on, out the back, shoot, because I wanted to try and be that guy. So it's, you know, and winning and losing is a bit of a part in that. So it's I like trying to get the balance of that right. Mightn't get it right all the time, but I think it's important for the kids.
Yeah, definitely. And that is a balance. But like to put a kind of a bow on all of that, really just talking about the camps, it's the people. So really that are making that as successful for the kids as it is. Like, and that one you just said about the lads in Curragh there, like being fully invested, like in the success of the kids. That's probably it in a nutshell. Like if kids see that you're fully invested in them for an hour of football training or an hour of basketball training or an hour of hurling or rugby or soccer, it doesn't matter, but that you're fully invested in trying to help them as best they can and make it as fun and as enjoyable as it is, even if you're not the greatest coach in the world. Like you'll have them. Like you'll have them eating out of the palm of your hand.
Yeah, I go down and help out with Fergal in the Brendan's Academy there on a Wednesday evening. He does an unbelievable job. There's kids everywhere, and I think the most crack they have in the day is when they come in at the end and I'll put their hands in 1, 2, 3, kids, and they're away the door. But like if you walked in as a coach and rolled down the ground instead of rolling around on the ground with them, should it? If their kids are 7 or 8, that's the best crack ever. Do you know what I mean? So can you become a child for an hour rather than being the authoritarian adult that's going to coach them? Because really, at that age, you're trying to show them a few bits, but then you're just trying to say, off you go and have as much fun as possible.
Yeah. Do you enjoy coaching that younger age group stuff? Do you enjoy the juvenile stuff as much or is it more of a challenge?
I do. You know me. Like I'm a big kid. Like I do enjoy it. I enjoy the most someone that's really struggling at day one. And then you see them at day four and they're a bit more comfortable in their own skin. They've improved over the 4 days. You know, one of the Flemings has showed them major love all week. You know, he comes into the hall, there's kids and coaches everywhere, and I can see them walking over for a high five with Fergal or one of the boys. And, you know, you kind of know, okay, this kid now is starting to, you know, basketball could be, and it's just, look, Mike, it's a great game. You know, like the basketball is such a good game, and even love getting the 100 footballers to go in for an hour and just go into a hall and be warm and have coaches showing them different things. And, you know, it's a huge learning experience in, but I think it's a nice balance where they do their own sport for 2 hours and they really get to kind of do that. And then they just go out to sample. And we try and work on obviously crossover skills and try and get them just to see, you know, could actually I'm a footballer, but I kind of like that hour in the basketball hall. Maybe I might go down to the academy because we always talked about it, multiple sports. If you can be playing multiple sports for as long as possible, I have a beef with the whole development squads at 12 or 14 or whatever they are. I'd like to see them pushed out another bit and leave the kids play all the other sports till they're 15 or whatever, make the decision then. But it's really good to be playing multiple sports.
Yeah, and that's your science backs that up. Obviously, like the longer you're playing multiple sports, the better your repertoire of skills and your coordination, your athleticism, all that stuff. So like telling kids in whether it's Gaelic football or soccer, rugby, basketball, telling kids at 12 or 13 or 14 years of age, you got to pick one sport now and that's it. Like that would be the sport for me that I would be telling my kids, okay, you're not going back to that sport. Like if somebody is telling you that this is the sport you have to pick at 12 years of age and you got to concentrate on the sport, well then I'm pulling my kids out of that sport as quickly as I possibly can, because they don't have the best interests of your kids at heart, really.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%, man. I back you all the way with that one.
Parenting, man. You're obviously, you've got young kids like myself. What is kind of parenting taught you that you've brought into coaching?
I would say that it has definitely helped with my coaching of, I would say, the underage stuff with the camps. I would say, because you quickly realize that kids are who they are. And every child is different. Every child is coming from a different background, happy, sad, whatever it may be. They're all coming from a different place. And you have to try and get, for me, when you're dealing with your own kids, you see that, like Lola Rose and Indy, my older two, they're poles apart. They're completely different kids. You know, and we haven't reared them differently. They just, yeah. Lola Rose is more like me. She's more disorganized, can't tune in for that long, switches off a lot. Indy is like mom. She's, you know, detail orientated, brushes her own hair, goes down and gets changed herself. It's like, it's just really kind of, you see that and then you're kind of going, okay, well, you can't go out here and expect all these kids to listen to you. You know, you're explaining something at the start, or a big one I go through is the rules of the camp and the bullying and the no online bullying are my two, like, I don't even want to hear the explanation. If I hear there's online bullying or there's something, I'll grab you, I'll ring your mom, I'll sit outside with you and they'll be gone and you'll never come back to one of my camps. And that's the way it is. And, you know, so, but like for younger ones, they're totally different. You can't have them all giving you the same level of focus. You've got the drifters, and Lola would be probably one of them. So, talking about something, no, that's what we're going to do in this game. And she could be looking at the roof. And, you know, you learn pretty quickly when, you know, that's just who they are. You just got to bring them along. They're going to get to an age where that will kind of drift out of them and they'll either be liking the sport and buy into it or not. And then you've got the kids that are 100% focused and listen to everything you say and go out and carry out everything perfectly. And you know what? It probably does help you when you're coaching even older people, because everybody's different and you've got to be able to try and handle all these different characters and try and bring them around to whatever, you know, as a management team you're trying to implement. And some of them will agree, some of them won't agree, some of them want it a different way, but can you try and bring it across to them and can you get them all to buy into it? And it probably does. Parenting does help, but parenting isn't easy. That much.
We should have another podcast on parenting or something, man. Yeah, that would be interesting. I heard when you said there, we haven't raised them differently.
I'd be more qualified as a parent than a coach, at least. I've 7 years parenting. I'm only 4 years coaching.
When you said that though, we haven't raised them differently. I remember I read something recently where somebody, I can't remember who it was saying that's not exactly true. That. Obviously, the same person never crosses the same river twice, because you as a person is changing constantly and the river is obviously changing constantly. So that the idea is when your first kid comes, you're a different person to the person you are when the second kid comes, and the environment in the house is whether you know it or not, is a different environment to the one that was there before the first kid was born. And I thought it made sense, because I was saying, well, if there's two kids born in the house, same mom and dad, same environment, same everything, but it's not. It's a fair point. It changes all the time, but
changes constantly.
Yeah. Apart from me, which when you've twins and they come at the same time, you don't really have an excuse, but still you can see the total differences, man.
The two of them are brilliant, but they are different, which is mad.
Totally.
You know,
totally.
Because they look alike. It's everybody's their own. The biggest thing in coaching, can you handle all the types of people in front of you? No matter whether they're kids, adults, or whether you're in a business or with a team. It's people, and that's the bit where I'm trying to learn the most from. And time is big as well. Like, you know, like that's, you know, when you're raising a young family and I'm still playing a bit of basketball, you know, there's a part of me would love to be a kind of a professional coach where you could say, right, okay, I'm going to spend all day trying to get better now as a coach. What will I learn about today? And what will I delve into? You're very much going on the fly when you're involved in teams. I am in a way. And look, I'll be finished playing everything soon enough and I'll be probably able to delve down into it a bit more. Like, I know you've done a huge amount of research, and, you know, your job before being above in the college was dealing with kids and coaching kids and small-sided games, and you'd have a huge bank of knowledge built up from that. And I suppose, I'm trying to catch up a bit with that stuff, I would feel.
Is that what you're looking at, I suppose, as your biggest kind of... you know, learning, I suppose, moving forward, like, you know, what is it? Is it that side of things, just to really build up a bigger kind of repertoire, or what is it that you really need to say, look, in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, I really want to focus on this kind of an area and really improve this part of my coaching? Because I think the biggest thing with coaching is, and you mentioned it about the camps and everything else, it's the people skills. Like, it's the talking, it's the being able to communicate with people, it's being able to get your message across to people. And then the other stuff, the games and the drills and the, all that kind of tactical and technical stuff, that's much easier to acquire than the actual skills to be able to communicate with people effectively and have people believe in what you're trying to sell.
Yeah, I think that's good. Like, I think that would probably be my strength, would be kind of, you know, that what you've just said there. And my weakness is probably all the other stuff that you said is stuff that I really have to catch up on. And I will in time, you know. Look, I'm obviously very busy with PST. We're delighted to sponsor this, by the way. It's what you're doing is brilliant. The work you're doing for Recovery Haven over is brilliant. But like, it's when you're busy at work and you're busy as a parent and you're still hacking away on the basketball courts and the football pitches of Kerry and Ireland, your time to improve yourself, I would say, is hard enough to come by. So, you know, that's probably over the next few years when, you know, when I stop fully playing and, you know, I'll actually be able to, I think, be able to do more. And that would be my goal. Sometimes I get cross with myself because I haven't done enough and that I'm maybe making excuses about not having time. But it's certainly, that's where my improvement would have to come. And you need time, you know, when you're dealing with 45 players and you're trying to get across and you're trying to text them and call them and, you know, and then your work phone is hopping because it's busy and that side of the business is growing and you're, you know, and home is getting busier and it's just, sometimes you feel like you're not winning, but you know, I must say I'm really enjoying being busy and trying to be better in all those different roles as a parent, as a coach, trying to become a sales director now with PST. So trying to help out with more management there. So that will cross over well with the sport in terms of, you know, being managing people in work is very similar. I would say almost identical to managing people in sport. It's an area where I have to improve on. It's a huge area that I've learned an awful lot off of Kieran McGeaney he as busy as he is and as mental as he is, he seems to always have time to deal with everything. And you know, there's a bit in that you have to be, you know, but like, you know, that's why I'm saying I might be making excuses. You know, he might get up at 5:30 in the morning and do an awful lot of his prep in the morning, whereas I'm stuck to the bed at 5:30 and like, I'm only getting up at 5:30 if Ruby May wakes. Like, there's no way I'm getting up at 5:30. Maybe for golf, Mike, we've hit the golf course at 6:10 a few mornings. I'll be there. I jump out of the bed like golf is, oh, here we go. So like that's the part that I would like to improve the most in myself.
And you mentioned the management side of it. Like, do you, in time, obviously there's very, very distinct differences in terms of coaching and management side of things. Like, and I know you've no idea, but down the line, like, would you see yourself in more of a management capacity or more of a coaching capacity or kind of a blended role between the two or something?
I'm very lucky with Kieran above in the fact that when, you know, I have so many meetings in Dublin with the pitches that go on up there at during the day that I can get up to Armagh. So I'm very flexible. And it was something when Kieran approached me first, like he was like, look, this will be very flexible towards you. Though Kieran he does a good bit of the coaching. We've Kieran McKeever, who's brilliant. We've Dennis Hollywood, who played with Armagh and has been around, kind of did your job with the Armagh County Board, looking after all the kids, the camps, all that kind of stuff. He's in with us. He's brilliant. So you're kind of, you know, when I'm up there, it's not like I come in and take over. I'm just coming in, adding in a bit all the time. And, you know, the boys are well able to run the session. So it's very flexible in that. And, you know, I kind of deal more with the forwards. I'd be touching in with the odd back, but I'd be talking to the forwards a bit more. And that's fine. Then you've got the, you know, I did the management with the Sigerson team and I enjoyed that. And I enjoyed more looking at the overall and letting guys, you know, do the coaching that were in with me that were really good coaches. So I think I like the idea of maybe management more and letting guys coach and having an overview. And if I see something, going to the coach with it, or jumping in on top at the end, giving my opinion on it. I think I've learned that from Kieran. He's really good. He lets me and McKeever at it, and he'll come in and he'll deliver a message that's very poignant and spot on, and it kind of rounds it off lovely. And, you know, we go back off and do our bits again and we come back in. So he's overseeing everything, but gives us great freedom. And I would say gives great freedom for me, especially to make mistakes. You know, I could come up with a drill around something that I would kind of know maybe that this isn't going great. This drill isn't like I kind of saw it. And could I tweak it? And I might say, is there any way, here, have a look at this and see if there's a way you could tweak it that might make it better. And he'll come in with a suggestion. But more importantly, he let me make, he won't come in after 2 minutes and go, well, Kieran, I think you need to move these two guys over.
Yeah.
He'd sit back and that's a huge part of my learning from him is really how important he makes us as selectors and coaches and backroom staff feel important towards the whole thing. He's not a kind of a hugely domineering figure in the group, and we're all, you know, he's really, really good that way to kind of let you at it. And that was good. That was okay. We can bring in this, we won't bring in that, and kind of oversee that side of it. So that's a big learning as well. But look, as you said, you're learning all the time off of these great minds. And look, I was with Kieran out in Australia. And when he asked me, obviously it was a bit left field and it needed a bit of thinking on my side and talking to Colin, how could we make this work, and talking to Hillary at home. And once I made it work, I was delighted. I wouldn't have gone up to anybody else, I'll put it that way. I just remember being extremely blown away by his character when I was with him as a player in 06 and as a selector in 08 and 11. And the chance I felt to work with him was one that I simply, as hard as it was, and he's made it really easy by kind of saying, Kieran, you let me know when your appointments are in Dublin and when you can make it up. And if you can make it twice a week, great. If you can make it once a week, you know, depending on games and what ways things fall, you know, that session might be only a kick around, a bit of a walkthrough. The main session will be Tuesday. You know, I could say, oh yeah, I have two appointments I could get in Tuesday. So that flexibility has been really good for me. And the learning I feel has been great for me as well. And they're a really good bunch. They're a really good bunch of players. And you're even learning stuff off the players because they're a high caliber player. And we've a good few leaders that are hitting their 30s now. So they've, you know, they know as much as me in many respects of the game. Yeah. They've been there and done it for the last 10 years. So you're learning off of them as well. So it's a really good environment.
And I just wrote down there, of course, you were recently announced as the Roscommon manager.
Oh my God, yeah.
Saw it on I don't know, was it on Twitter or something? I was like, geez, Firp, that's a big move. Best of luck. Yeah.
And yeah, no, like, see, like, even that, like, I just wouldn't, yeah, like, I'm honestly too busy with work. That wouldn't even be an option for me. And I never even talked to them, which was the thing that bothered me most, which is why when it came out, I was like, hold on, I hadn't even had a conversation with,
yeah,
there's no, nobody's rang me, nobody's texted me, nobody's looked for a meeting. It was like, it was so left field because it was, Kieran was away. I think Kieran might have been working or something, and he was away, and kind of text message from Kieran, like, you know, well, you know, what's this about? I'm like, what's what about? Like, and there's a message underneath it. I hit it to load it, like, and it comes up, Donaghy to be unveiled as Roscommon manager. And I'm going, you know, and that whole conversation is, you know, and then, you know, you're worried. Is he thinking, was he talking to them? Was he going to go? And, you know, oh, it's an awful position. Like, look, if anybody out there who's working with a paper or whatever, make sure that there's some level of truth to something before you go on a WhatsApp rumor, because WhatsApp rumors are my poison. They're the thing that annoys me the most about people sending their own WhatsApps about other people. That just cracks me up. I don't even read them now. I just delete them. I lose the plot on groups that I'm on going, lads, you know, don't be posting that stuff about somebody, like, just leave it off, you know. And I'm probably the crank, but I've been the target of it before. So it's a wiry one for me. But yeah, that's so no.
Wasn't
ever on the cards.
Not now, but later we can see, yeah, more management than coaching, and have a little bit of board of that, man. That's
yeah, and that's me, you know, like that's way off. Having the skill set to be a manager now, but looking to learn and see if I can get there someday. Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. Is there anything, man, before we wrap up, is there anything else there now that I think we've covered a lot of it, really, but is there anything that's kind of still in your head there that you didn't get a chance to throw out that would be important? Obviously, I'm always, when I'm doing this, very conscious that I know there'll be people listening to this that are involved, that your senior club stuff and your minors, and then there'll also be your sixes and eights. And I think, to be fair, through the camp stuff and obviously with our man Galway, I think we've probably covered a lot of it. But is there anything there that we've left out?
I would say that kind of that age for boys and girls when they're kind of like 16, 17, 18 is also kind of an age that, but you know, I know we're very focused on the younger groups and then you've got your teams, but I think them coaches have a huge role to play in clubs and, like, you know, and getting the balance of that right. It's just such an important age for kids with society where it is now and where they can drift to if they're not playing sport. And, you know, I think clubs have to really look into, you know, have we got good guys at that minor and that under 16 level or whatever it is, 17s and 15s or whatever. I think them two ages are a crucial age, because even though you're starting to get serious a bit and people are like want to win the under 15 county championship or whatever, like it's not overly important. What's the most thing is that these kids are coming to train and they're enjoying it, and that you're able to level with them somewhat. Like we'd Frank Courtney, I played with his son Martin was a brilliant footballer, and Frank got the balance perfect between being strict and always having a bit of a glint in his eye. You know, you knew he liked you, but he wasn't going around telling you he liked you all the time. But he got that balance right between, you know, he could have a go off you, but you wanted to play for him. And I think that's a good place to be at that age. You have to level with these kids. Like, they're into their TikToks, and, you know, even if you can learn or have a bit of crack on that with them. And, you know, I just think that's a vital age, as vital as what you're doing with your sevens and eights, because, you know, a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old may still wander into a football club and start playing, or someone like me who gave up football for a year and a half when I was 14 to 15 and a half, but it was Frank, it was Aidan O'Connor, it was Russ Bradbird at a time in my life where I was, you know, drink was coming into the equation, college life, going out, partying, it wasn't a good place. And all these guys played huge roles in me kind of helping me enjoy the game. And, you know, it wasn't all enjoyment, but, you know, could they make the bus journeys to the games fun? And I was a messer down the back of the bus, as you can imagine, Mike. And Frank Courtney, I'd walk in, he'd say, "You get one chance now, Donny, he go back there. Any mess, no, you're up here next to me." And, you know, Danny, up the front. That was it. Like, you know, and I'd go up, but he'd be above then, like, even though he snapped at me and moved me up the front, he'd be above and he'd be kind of sidewinding, having chats with me at the side of, you know, and kind of that glint and almost like having a bit of a bond. And then you'd Aidan O'Connor with junior C, junior B football at a time where I wasn't enjoying football really. Started to come good with Frank and the minors, went in as 16 and a half, started playing with the junior C team, so the third string team, bunch of young fellas and a bunch of functioning alcoholics. And they wouldn't mind me saying that because they'd know the crack. But, like, we had such fun and training. Aidan O'Connor was old school training. There was no fancy drills. We did stuff that got laughs, like rock the boat, where you were like lying down on your belly and you were trying to get your chin and your legs up, and he'd all these things, you know, hamstrings. And it was the same thing every night, but he'd go in the middle, he'd be walking around, he'd be having a bit of crack, the buzz would be good. We'd finish doing all the stretching and the striding in and out, and next thing, pick the teams, backs and forwards, and he'd always kind of keep the score, and then he'd let the backs attack the forwards, which was very novel at the time, but it was just basically so the backs wouldn't not come to training anymore because they were defending for the whole training session. So they'd turn it around and he'd like, "The backs have it now, can the backs score?" And sure, it was all just a bit of crack and that bit of camaraderie and going out every Friday night after games. And, you know, it's a big age. So them coaches, yeah. You know who you are. They're probably listening to the podcast. How much can you get your kids looking forward to playing for you? And can you be having the crack rather than being the hammer and tongs at that age and wanting we must win the minor championship? And yes, it's important. And as I said, I was competitive when I was young. And when I started getting to minor finals and under 21 finals, all that would do me would be to win. Mm. But that's just the one game or the one result. It's the 6 or 7 months or 8 months before that, which is what would bring you back the year after, not that final result. So that would be the last thing I would say. I think those both for girls and boys, especially girls, actually kind of 15 and 16. I see it with the camps, like you get the girls are brilliant and then they get to 13 or 14 and you know there's a little change and you know you're trying to say no, like you're brilliant basketball, you got to keep it going, and I'm with the Kerry hurlers and we have to play hurling, or I'm with the, you know, the footballers, and I'm like girls, play as much as you can play for as long as you can play it and you'll have plenty of time, and if you're good enough for the hurling or the football, they'll have you. Don't worry about it, they're not going to not pick you because you're not good enough. So yeah, I would say that's the last thing, I suppose, is just that bracket we mightn't have touched on too much.
Yeah, very good. And to be fair, like those age groups for kids that are dropping out of sport, like if you're talking about 15, 14, 15, 16 years of age, that's where they're dropping out. That's where we're losing the vast, you know, majority of the kids that are dropping out of sport before they get to those age groups. And it's a great point. They're like sponges, like that's such influential ages where we're going this route here towards a bit of drinking, a bit of vaping, a bit of whatever. Yeah. Or we're somehow staying a little bit more kind of with the group and getting the most out of ourselves, you know, in the sporting sense. So I want to just thank you, obviously, that was really good. I thought we got a lot of good stuff there, so I'm sure people will get a lot out of it. And for the people that are listening, obviously, this is still primarily a fundraiser for Recovery Haven in Tralee, who are an organization who provide free cancer support services for the people of Kerry and beyond, and do just fantastic work. And I'm glad, I'm very thankful for the people who have already donated. And there's a link in the podcast description or on my Twitter page at Mike Quirk. And I would ask everybody that has got a little bit of joy out of these things or got a bit of information, now in the next couple of months, as we all get back on the field with our teams or in the gym, if you're playing basketball or rugby, whatever it is, now is a good time to start listening to these, and that podcast and that fundraiser, should I say, will be open for another while. So if you have a couple of spare euros after Christmas, it'll be much appreciated by them and by me. So Kieran, thanks a million again, man. Really appreciate your time, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thanks, Mike.